Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing.
Hey, everyone. Have you been to the Organic Gardener Podcast website and signed up for our email list? If you go there, you will get my new PDF, 7 Awesome Ways to Find More Time in Your Garden. And it's just some tips that I've learned from listening to my amazing guests who are always sharing with us super effective ways to be a better gardener. So if you head over to the organicgardenerpodcast.com and enter your email, you'll get 7 awesome ways to find more time in your garden. You can also get a copy of our ebook of Organic Gardening Basics. And just all the show notes are there, all the links to our show. So, and I'll be sending out some Golden Seeds newsletters as I get them done. And of course, you'll get a special invitation to join the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook community. Hope to see you there. Welcome to episode 163 of the Organic Gardener Podcast. We're talking on Christmas Eve because we both love our planet and the environment, and so we're here to share our story. It was a good day. Anyway, I'm talking to somebody that I think listeners are going to love because he's innovative, he's an entrepreneur. He was born and raised in rural Napoleon, Michigan. He started his first business cutting grass for his neighbors, and a spirit for self-sufficiency and a love for design and nature began there and has culminated with his new business, Farmworks, which I know you guys are just going to love. He's the producer of the world's finest raised bed gardens. So he lives with his and works with his wife, Sinyan, and is the proud father of 4 awesome children. So today, to share his gardening journey and his business journey and his entrepreneurship, is Chris West from Farmworks Builders. Is it just Farmworks Builders?
Farmworks, basically. Yeah. Hey, thank you, Jackie. hello to you. That was very nice. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I'm so excited. I'm so glad you took time out of Christmas weekend. You have 4 kids. I didn't even realize that till this morning to chat with me because my busy schedule with teaching and stuff, my days are so limited. So thanks for coming on. And why don't you go ahead and tell, like, I gave like a little brief bio, but tell listeners a little bit more about yourself.
Certainly. I do. I'm a very proud father. I have 4 children, 3 girls and a boy. And I've just kind of been bouncing around ever since I left Napoleon. I was in the Marine Corps for some time and kind of got going out in Southern California. So I spent quite a bit of my developing years, if you want to call it that, in that neck of the woods, and learned quite a bit. I spent a lot of time in corporate America. My background is sales and marketing. I was like a Western Regional Director for kind of a large facilities corporation out that way. And got into advertising and television and things along those lines also along that way. And then basically just got it to a point where I kind of woke up, you know, which I think maybe a lot of people can resonate with. You kind of wake up to some things. And I just kind of wanted to get out of that. And so I kind of fell back on, you know, the things that I kind of grew up with and grew up around and, you know, thinking back and mowing those yards and things like that, and just kind of started Farmworks out of that. And so I literally started with my own backyard and just kind of converted that into kind of a raised bed setting, and took some pictures, set it up online, and next thing you know, I got people calling saying, can you build some of those for me? So that's kind of how the whole thing got started.
Nice. Well, tell people about your beautiful website that already looks beautiful, and then we were saying the pre-chat's growing and going to change a little. So tell people a little bit about what is Farmworks.
So Farmworks, basically, what we like to say is we are an innovative garden design company that, I mean, we build gardens for everyone on any scale for any particular reason. And we go the raised bed route simply because one of our mottos is less work and more food. As anyone in the gardening world knows, it's a tremendous amount of work. There's weeding and there's all these other aspects to it, and it's pretty labor intensive. And so kind of our goal, and, you know, as we move forward here into our technological future, is to kind of take a lot of, or alleviate a lot of those laborious aspects to it, so that you can really just produce, you know, high yielding plants, high yielding fruit and vegetables and things along those lines. And that really is our goal.
I love that. I've been telling Mike to do something like this around here for years, because we, like, So I'm in Montana. I don't even know if you know that part. And where we are, we're right by the Canadian border. And a lot of our industry here has become like logging's kind of gone out. They've taken pretty much all the big trees there are. So now, you know, the mills are all gone. They're going to Georgia and places where they can, you know, make a log in 20 years and not 100 years. Anyway, so sure. We've become a much more touristy industry, and there's Canadians everywhere, and the Canadians really care about what they eat. They support our health food store. We have a huge health food store thanks to the Canadians who come down during the summer. And I think they're the kind of people that would love to have somebody, you know, take the work out of it, so then when they come down on the weekend, the garden's just there. So I'm really excited to hear about how this is going, and I think other people in other areas are going to be excited. And then maybe some people are like, yeah, that's, because then I talk also a lot about, so I almost always have a full-time job, and then my husband Mike is the gardener, and he spends a lot more time working on growing our food. So I think a lot of my listeners are people like me who work full-time that also want somebody to come do the hard part of, like, if I had to build the raised beds, it would be much harder for me as a woman to do that. I mean, not that, but just for me. I'm not a perfectionist. Like, to nail two boards the same way is a challenge for me in a big way. It's like my personal, like, quirk. Anyway, so let's move on, and I'll be quiet. You talk about how, I don't know, tell it. Well, all right. So I do usually like to start asking about, like, what was your very first gardening experience? You know, were you a kid? Were you an adult? Did you grow up with gardens? Like, where, what was the first thing you grew, and who were you with?
For sure. Gardening in that sense has always, there isn't a time in my memory where that wasn't present. Like I said, I'm from a very rural area of Michigan. There's like more cows than people.
Oh, cool. And
I grew up, I had like a Tom Sawyer type childhood where my front yard was a lake. My backyard was about 800 acres of pine forest.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
There was 30, 40 kids who lived in and around that lake. And we literally, it was just an adventurous childhood. It was fantastic. We did everything that you would think kids in those days would do, building forts and things like that. But the presence of food, naturally growing food, was always there. There was always raspberries to pick from, blueberries. We just had like this strawberry patch in the middle of a field that just produced year after year after year. And that's where we would go when it's time to, you know, get something to eat real quick. We just go over to that. And I have no idea who like owned that, or it was just an open field with strawberries growing in. It was fantastic. And then my parents had a garden that we literally ate from. I mean, that was part of our food source, essentially. And so we had probably about an acre that my father tilled, and we grew a little bit of everything. And I finally remember, you know, snap beans and things like that, and just eating them right off of the plant in the garden. So from a small child and growing all the way up, making pickles and growing cucumbers and all of those fun things. So it's really, you know, kind of woven into the fabric of who I am from that perspective. And I think in that generation, that's not an uncommon thing. I think there's a lot of people who probably have a very similar experience before we kind of went on this fast track into this kind of hyper consumerism that we kind of are all experiencing now. But there was a time when that really was just not the case.
Nice. I know it sounds idyllic, the way that you lived with all that land around you and all your kids playing. That sounds so cool. And
it,
yeah,
was
definitely, like, my mom and I argue all the time, because she's like, oh, organic is just like such a label, and she's charging more. And I'm like, Mom, she's like, we ate, you know, food, regular food for years. I'm like, yeah, but Mom, the food that you bought at the store is not the food that you're getting today, and it makes a big difference. But
that's exactly right. There's been a large, just a huge, you know, change in that, and in industrial farming, factory farming, and just, you know, the innovations that they've made from their side. When you look at ammonium nitrates and things like that, that they've been able to just create this exponential amount of food, and then take that, give it to a chemist, and I'm going to break down corn and make 17 different types of product based on this corn. So it's kind of a whole different, you know, avenue that's gone down, certainly from an industrial standpoint. And that is what it is. You know what I mean? It's like a lot of people create kind of like this, you know, them versus us about it. But my view really is, that's what motivates them, and that's what they do. And there's nothing wrong in terms of, like, from a competing standpoint. I think it's very important that we, you know, kind of compete. Let's compete. And that's where you're seeing this organic, you know, and there is a premium that can be charged for it, which in many ways helps the smaller farmer and whatnot. That premium does help. But I think as we go forward, it's going to become more crucial to really be able to pound for pound shelf space and really compete directly against those types of, you know, large scale food producers.
Nice. So, boy, it sounds like you've really been researching this and doing, and you have a lot of knowledge about it. I wasn't even sure if you were like an organic farmer when I asked you to do the interview.
Oh, I'm very, yeah, I have immersed myself. This is my life. This is what I do for sure. I know, you know, as much as I, you know, anything that affects it or how it, you know, my approach to it per se, but I've done hordes of research and across the board. And, you know, that's just kind of, that's part of the farm works also, you know, it's kind of taking all of those things in consideration to say, if the end goal is this, you know, we have to kind of, you know, walk it forward at this step, this step, this step. So I know that's very vague in terms of how that just sounded, but in my brain, it's like, no, that's how it works. You got, you know, there's all these cogs that have to go into this particular machine, because like you said at the onset here, that we have to protect our planet. We really do. And it isn't a stretch to say that nature is considerably smarter than we are. You only have to look at its own exponential factor, meaning, you know, I take a tomato, and inside of that tomato is an abundance of seed, and that creates even more tomato plants, which creates even more seeds. And that really, you know, in a very short period of time, that's a massive number. And the sun keeps shining and all of that is all fine. It's like this just amazing perpetual motion machine, you know, that just goes and goes and goes. And I think our role here from human's standpoint is to kind of shepherd nature to, you know, for the results that are going to be the most beneficial for us as a whole, and not whip nature. I think that is the difference between the organic farmer and the industrial farmer. Is the industrial age is really about beating and whipping into submission, you know, as far as what they're trying to produce, where the organic guy, there's a lot more heart that comes into it. And you can almost taste that in a sense. You know what I mean? It really comes through, and they say, well, that's why it tastes so much better. And I believe that's one of the reasons why we're really shepherding nature more so than just beating it into submission.
I like that. You have the best analogies. So then did you, is it because you grew up in like a natural, is that how you learned how to grow organically or?
Basically, not really. I just kind of, you know, little tidbits here and there and just kind of go that route. But to me, it's the one thing I've always been drawn to is very complex systems. I don't have no idea why. I just, it really works. Like my brain can wrap around very complex things, meaning there's a lot of moving parts to something. I can kind of organize those in a way, at least in my brain, and create something out of that. And so when you look at nature and you look at growing organically, you know, it's really like what I like to call the flowers versus fleas analogy, being, you know, if you want to get rid of fleas in your house, your best bet is to, you know, kind of invade the space with flowers that fleas don't like, and they'll go away. Because that's kind of nature's defense against that. And so when you're growing organically, there's all of these, you know, steps and all these various things that you can do that nature, again, has already figured it out. You don't have to go and get pesticides and herbicides and fungicides and all these things. There's other steps that you can do because nature already has the answer and has had the answer for, you know, 3 billion years worth of evolution to this point, if not more. So that's really kind of my approach. And like, well, what is the system that we have to put together? Obviously, the first being the soil, right? The soil is the most important component in any garden. That is the foundation of everything. And the plants are obviously going to, you know, thrive in the soil that has everything that they require in that sense. And so, and part of that being, you know, the soil, oh, what do they call that? The soil web, which is basically like a very intricate network of, you know, microbes and all of these, you know, chemicals and these combinations that all come together and make this plant thrive, which is just fascinating to me that nature, you know, what we call that in the industrial world or in the world of technology is nanotechnology. That's probably something people can relate to, that they're trying to create nanotechnology, but nature already has it. And when you look at microbes and you look at these things, that's what that is. And, you know, they all come together and they do a fantastic job. And that's how you get these, you know, amazing plants to grow. And that's why organic is just vastly superior. Vastly. I mean, it's not even a close second in terms of the, you know, the high scale producers out there.
Cool. I agree. I've always felt that way, that organic should be, you know, I don't know. I just have never understood why it costs more. Like, I think, like, if we pursue it and people keep sharing their information like you are, that we're going to realize that it's the more economically sensible way to go. And I was thinking, since you have these deep beds, you were going to know a lot about soil.
Oh, yeah. Soil is vastly. We make our own soil. FarmWorks creates its own soil. We call it gold dust. And we do that right. We literally just got a new property here near Ann Arbor. And it's kind of like my own little, you know, organic laboratory, if you will. We got really, you know, about a 2,000 square foot workshop that we work out of. And then about an acre and a half that we have committed strictly to, you know, these systems that we're producing. And so soil is a major component to that. And it makes my customers very happy, because when you put, you know, that type of soil in there, they're almost, you know, you don't really need a green thumb per se for, you know, to see really good results. And, you know, we have very good feedback coming from that. So it's important.
Tell us about your gold dust soil then.
Well, to the extent that I want to talk about it, okay. You know, it's. There's a lot of information out there about how to make really good soil. And so basically what we did, we just kind of created our own recipe in that respect. And so we do all of our own composting, and from various, you know, materials. Because you live out in rural Michigan, there's just an abundance of compost. You can never have, you'll never go through it all. There's just endless amounts of it. So we cook our own compost from there. There's some peat mosses that are involved. There's some other structural things that are involved. But primarily, you know, what we cook into the compost is where the nutrients are coming from for the plants. And then, like any, you know, every good gardener knows that. You're making teas and you're making various things like that. You know, it's very good for your plants because they like that. It's like steroids in a certain sense, you know, in a natural way. But, and so, and then our soil, we just bag it. We just bag everything up, you know, by the yard, per se. And then we just, essentially every FarmWorks product or system that you purchase through us comes complete. So it comes with the soil, and I mean, you get to pick your own plants, but it comes installed, it comes complete. So you're basically just ready to plug and play at that point.
Cool. Well, I don't know. Michigan is maybe different than Montana, or at least like a lot of people I've talked to. Finding the dirt is one of the hardest challenges. Like, we always have a challenge every year trying to fill our beds and have enough compost to grow, or, you know, fresh, good dirt, or good enough compost to add to our dirt to make it, you know, build the nutrients. So,
well, that's cool. Good to know. There might be a line of supply. It's just a supply chain line there. You never know.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding. In Michigan, we have, you know, there's trees everywhere here. And people have lots of space. There's a lot of space in Michigan, and there's just tons and tons of trees. And every single fall, they give you a whole new, you know, the whole new batch of leaves and sticks and just all kinds of good stuff that you can, you know, cook up.
Oh, yeah, because see, we have mostly pine forest, so we don't get a lot of leaves. Leaves are a challenge. For us, for Mike and I, the biggest thing we get to add to our compost to make it grow is the grass clippings.
Grass clippings are obviously very good as well. Totally agree. You know, and pine needles, actually. Once pine needles go brown and you cook them up, that's good compost as well. I mean, generally people associate pine needles with acidic, right? Mm-hmm. That's going to like raise the acidity of your soil. But that's really not the case after you've composted it. So all of that goes away in that process. I don't know the specifics of that, but I know that is a fact in terms of that. You won't be dealing with that. It's generally pH neutral when it comes out.
Okay. Well, so now, do you have a garden for you and your wife? Do you want to tell us about something that grew well this year, like for you and your kids at your home?
We actually, because we just got the property, we were in transition. And so I wasn't able to grow a single thing this year or this past season. And, you know, making that transition was kind of what, you know, I guess that's what we did grow. We have a new property. And so, but, you know, the design is out there. I have most of the components ready to go into our garden. It's going to be pretty significant. We probably have about 5,000 square feet of what I would consider a pretty intensive organic that we're going to put in there. But everything that we do is really systems oriented based on what we want to produce. And so my next big challenge actually is our chicken coop, because I have an idea in terms of how I want to raise chickens in a more hands-free way. Chickens are very dirty. I'm sure many people know that. There's just a lot of work involved with chickens. So I'm trying to look at a number of different systems that we can put together to kind of alleviate a lot of those, you know, chicken issues, if you will. And so I'm looking forward to that as well. But that will all be incorporated into our garden because everything is a cycle. And so I just want to take, you know, part of that, or, you know, kind of what's the word here? Incorporate into that cycle. It's like call it an open loop system, if you will, but everything kind of, everything feeds everything else in that particular sense. And again, being in Michigan, you know, we're the largest freshwater state in the United States. And so the fresh water is not an issue here. We have an absolute abundance of it. And as I sit here and look out, we have probably about a foot and a half of snow right now that's just kind of waiting to become even more fresh.
Chris, if you can hear me, I'm going to call you back because, I don't know, sometimes GarageBand and Skype drop the call.
Sorry about that.
No, don't be sorry. It happens almost every, well, not every time I do an interview, but it happens a lot.
Okay.
It's just Skype. But what can you complain? I mean, it's free and it's clear and...
it's
the only way I know how to record, so it works for me.
Excellent. Excellent.
Okay, you were saying Michigan's the fresh water, it's got the most fresh water and it's snowing, and that's where it cut off.
That's where I cut off? Okay. So maybe not the most fresh water, maybe Minnesota would fight us over that one, but we have just an abundance of fresh water in Michigan.
Wow,
and good. It's not a problem because coming from California where I was at, obviously there, you know, the drought is a very serious thing out there,
right.
But we don't have those issues here. So it's, you know, I'm very fortunate in that respect to be able to have that kind of, just the resources we have here. I mean, it's just an ideal place to be able to do this type of thing that we're doing, which is why I moved back to Michigan to begin with.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. So the chicken thing kind of like answers the question, says there's something you're excited to do differently next year. Before we get to the root of things, we're going to thank our sponsors and affiliate links. Organifi Green Juice is a gently dried superfood mix that supports health, mental clarity, while detoxifying your body all in one delicious drink. What I love about Organifi, it makes me feel great. It's easy. It doesn't take much time. It's full of nutrients and superfoods that I have a hard time getting anywhere else. And it just tastes delicious. Now, as a teacher, you all know that our time is totally limited. I have kids in my classroom from 7:30 in the morning till 6 o'clock at night. So just even using this simple thing can be difficult for me, but I can pull it off and so can you. If you want to feel good and get all your greens in a simple, easy drink, remember, you can get a discount as an Organic Gardener podcast listener by entering code OGP16 and Organifi will give you a 15% discount now. So just go to Organifi.com and when you go to checkout, enter code OGP16 and they'll give you 15% off your order anytime. Did you know that you could support the Organic Gardener podcast without doing anything differently? If you're going to buy something on Amazon.com, since I'm an Amazon affiliate, if you go to Amazon through a link on my page, which every book that is listed on my website is linked to Amazon.com, you don't have to buy that book, but anything you buy that day from Amazon will give me a very, very small commission, but I got to tell you, it would sure help pay for, you know, just some of the basics it costs to keep the podcast up there. So let's get to the root of things. And I will ask you, what do you have like an activity that's like your least favorite activity that you have to like kind of force yourself to go out and do in the garden?
You know, that's a very good question. The, probably the least favorite activity I have is we mill all of our own wood. We work primarily with cedar and we always start with rough sawn timber and we mill all of it ourselves. And to be honest with you, I have sawdust that would rival mountains. I'm not kidding. And that's probably my least favorite activity is going through that initial milling process. That is just a rough, it's a lot of work. And I mean, the end result is fantastic and it's a very economical way to do it because you simply invest in the equipment as opposed to, you know, a finished product and you just create your own finished product. But it's work to get to that point. I could tell you that. And that probably is number one on my least favorite thing to do.
Huh. Okay. Well, Mike's done a lot of that. He did a lot of that more when I wasn't around. Now he like what he does that amazes me is he'll like cut down the trees and make like the post and poles to build our fence. And then the digging the post holes and like peeling the bark off the trees. That's the kind of hard work you're talking about.
Oh, yes.
Because your beds are just beautiful. The pictures on your website are just like anybody would want those. Those are nice beds that you're building.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Sorry. So, on the flip side, what's your favorite activity to do in the garden? What do you just love to do out there?
I kind of just like to take it all in. I really do.
That's
Probably the
nice.
number one thing, I love taking pictures of that stuff for some reason and just finding the right angles, especially when things are really cooking and or not cooking, but things are really in bloom and it's going really well and it's just a nice clear Kodachrome kind of day. And to get out there with a camera and try to capture it all. And I've that very those types of things really inspire me to just kind of keep pushing and keep pushing to say, you know, where else can we go with this stuff? But that probably is my favorite thing to do, is just to kind of walk around and take it all in. And I've been very fortunate. I've had a number of clients that I've worked with who have done a just an amazing job, two of which come right off the top of my head, of planting their gardens. You know, so I have built them the here design and build their systems for them, and they'll come in after the fact and plant them. And they're just absolutely spectacular. And I love visiting them and talking with them, and everyone's always very excited about that kind of thing. And so it's just really just taking in the finished product. I really, that's probably number one.
Okay, so can I ask you, like, as a side note, and if you don't want to answer this, that's fine, but like I was telling you in the beginning, I'm like so obsessed with like business. And like, what was it like finding your first client? Was that scary? I don't know, maybe you come from a corporate world and like you said you had some sales, like, but for like somebody like me and like Mike and I are just starting out, and like to me it's always the marketing is always the hardest part. So like, do you want to tell us a
That's
little bit about that?
absolutely. That's a very good question. You know, there's FarmWorks is essentially two separate companies. The first being FarmWorksAnnArbor.com is our website, and that is where you go to get the beds, the systems, all of the various components that you need to have a really nice raised bed garden in your home or business or school or wherever you want to go. That's one component. The other component is what we call FarmWorks Builders, and that's FarmWorksBuilders.com, and that's where we'll bring in folks like yourself and Mike, and we will train them. We will train you guys. This is how you do this. Marketing 101, operations 101, based on the 7 years that I've been doing this now, and every good, bad, and otherwise thing that I know, this is how we approach it. And marketing really is, you know, there's a plethora of information in terms of how to become a very good marketer, but you always have to start with who is your customer. And then put yourself, what we used to say in television, put yourself on the couch. What is it that they would like to see? What is it that they, you know, are gonna is gonna resonate with them, and then they will ultimately respond to. And so that's really where marketing starts, is who is your customer? And then you kind of work it backward from that point forward. And so that's what we've always done. My background has been in direct to consumer and direct business to business. So I've always been consumer direct. And so that has helped me tremendously. In
Okay,
creating,
back up just right there. What does that mean, consumer direct?
consumer direct. So imagine a lot of most people are, when you're buying products and you're buying certain things like that, you're going through a retail channel to make that happen. And so if you go to the grocery store, your grocery store is not producing anything on those shelves, right? I mean, they're just kind of housing them for everybody else. Where a consumer direct would be more like the manufacturer direct to you. And so the middleman, essentially from the retail standpoint, is not there. And so on television, what you'll see is 1-800-555 whatever, whatever, call now. That's a consumer direct type response, or what they call direct response. And so you're going directly to the person that you want, cutting out the middleman.
Okay.
That's consumer direct.
So how did you get your very first customer?
You know, it's a funny story. I got my very first customer when I had first redone my backyard. This was in California, by the way. This is kind of where we started. I had got my children a dog, and I redid the entire yard, and the dog kind of destroyed it. And so the dog and I were not on the best of terms at that moment. And I seriously considered, like, we might have to find her a new home. And so I put some advertising out there, and I had a lady who was interested in the dog. Could you bring the dog over? And I went over there, and her backyard was in some really rough shape. And she told me about it. And I said, well, I kind of dabble in this backyard stuff, and if you'd be interested, you know. And she said, yes. And so that's just kind of how that whole thing started. And we built a very nice garden, kind of lawn and garden for her. And she was a single mom with two kids, and very nice lady. And that really was like the very first customer I ever had. And that's how it happened, thankfully, for my dog, which they still have, by the way. And the dog is still part of the family. So it's just kind of an odd thing, but that really is where it started. And that's how it started.
Okay. So then you were doing this in California, and now you just moved to Michigan. So are you starting all over trying to find customers again?
In a sense, yes, absolutely. And my first real full season in California, the phone did not stop ringing. There's something to be said for, a market base of about 15 million people. And at this point, there really is. I literally was doing this out of my garage and the side of my house and, just building, building, building. It was nonstop. It literally was 16 hours a day, every day, for months and months on end. It was so rewarding. I can't, because you're doing your own thing now from an entrepreneurial standpoint, and it was fantastic. Just for a variety of reasons, it became apparent that it was going to be, I needed to find more space to be able to do this with, to really be able to realize, the full potential of how I saw this. And I'm being originally from Michigan, it was a pretty easy decision to say, you know what? Let's just kind of close things down here and let's recalibrate things in Michigan and take it to the next level. And so that's essentially what we've done.
Cool. Oh, I love all this. I know. And then the other one, I've always told Mike he should go build raised beds for my mom, because my mom is not a big vegetable gardener, because I think she's never had a raised bed and she doesn't know how cool raised beds were. Like, she's always grown herbs and she always grows flowers and she's done some vegetables and, always has a tomato plant and a squash or two. But like, I think she would grow a lot more if she knew the wonders of raised beds. Like, I didn't really know what a raised bed was till I came to Montana, and I can't imagine ever having a garden again without them, even though Mike built a
Totally.
mini farm that has no raised beds in it. But I mean, I guess he kind of like builds like the soil over, but to me, compared to the, like the ones that are in our like close to the house garden that you can sit on. To me, if you can't sit on the edge of your garden, forget it. But that's
Right.
me. But anyway, all right, well, cool. Well, that was a great little side story there. So what's the best gardening advice you've ever received, Chris?
Wow, that's a good question. The best gardening advice I have ever received. I think when I first came to realize this thing called companion planting, that I was taught by a friend of mine, and I had no idea of such a thing. And when I started researching and really understanding what companion planting meant, it literally was like the 4th of July going off in my head. I couldn't believe, I mean, it was such an exciting thing to me to realize planting a basil, planting basil with your tomato benefits them both like tremendously. And that was a huge moment. It really was. That probably is the best thing. And then just could be able to take that and really run with it. And then almost like, I kind of look at it like a composer from like a music standpoint, imagine like Mozart sitting down trying to figure out, his 20th piano concerto or whatever. And all of these things all come together to make just this absolutely beautiful piece of music. And I look at companion planting very much the same way. Like, okay, here's all these components that we have, and they all work together in such a way that you can create melody, right? There's harmonies that can be created here, and it's such a beautiful thing. It really, I don't know, it just excites the heck out of me to be able to do that. And a lot of our systems are built directly from that, and kind of something we want to coin the composition garden, because we want to compose a garden based on what you'd like to grow. And believe it or not, all these things really love growing together. And so that's probably the best thing I've learned in gardening.
Nice. Oh man, you are so eloquent and you're just dropping tons of golden seeds. People are gonna love this. What's your favorite tool? Like, if you had to, like, when you were moving, what did you, like, if you could have only taken one thing with you, what would you, could you not live without?
I probably, and all the guys will understand this one for sure, the chop saw. You can't live without your chop saw when you're a builder. If you don't have anything else, if you at least have your chop saw or a miter saw, you'll be okay for the most part. You can do a whole lot with that thing. So that probably, I'd be dead in the water without it, that's for sure.
Cool. Nobody said that yet. How about a favorite recipe? Do you have something you either like to cook or eat from the garden that you like your favorite food?
I'm a huge salsa fan. I love salsa. And, spending a good amount of time in Southern California, you just have just a better immersion into the world of salsa. Because growing up in Michigan, as a small kid, I'll never forget, like, the first time I saw an avocado, it was when I was in the Marine Corps, when I was, like 18, 19. And I'm like, what is this? I never knew what an avocado was until I was like later in life. And so salsa, you know, it's such a fantastic thing. And you can literally take things right out of the garden, chop them all up, throw it in a bowl, and boom, you have salsa just like that. So I'm a huge fan of salsa.
Cool. I love salsa too, and guacamole. And I don't make the best salsa, but I make a killer guacamole.
All right. I'm going to hold you to that.
Yeah, okay.
Guacamole. I love guacamole. Man, that stuff is so good.
Right. How about a favorite internet resource? Is there anywhere you like to go on the web that you just specifically like the most?
There's no shortage of information online. That's the beauty of the internet, right? I mean, it's just such an amazing tool in that respect. But I think the one thing that stands out the most to me, especially recently, is if you go onto Facebook, you'll see there's a number of groups. And it's kind of how I came, even you and I kind of made this connection. And those Facebook groups are really priceless. Here's real people actively pursuing whatever it is, you know, whatever your fancy is. It doesn't even have to be gardening. There'll be a whole group of people online who are also doing these things. And it's just a fantastic exchange of knowledge and information and generally goodwill. You'll see, you know, every now and again, people will kind of pick on each other. But for the most part, it's a very beneficial thing. And so that's probably number one for me is to just kind of mind those groups for information and great personalities. I think that's what really elevates that is because there's a personality that comes with it. It isn't just some static page that you're reading. You know, when you're dealing with real people with real information, there's a personality that comes with it and helps quite a bit.
Oh man, you are just like, I love that. Well, I'm a huge Facebook fan. My listeners know. And I just get so frustrated. And yeah, I know there are people probably like when people are like, oh, Facebook's just about people posting pictures of what they eat for lunch or silly cat videos. I'm like, you need to find a secret group or you need to find a group in Facebook. Trust me, Facebook is about so much more. Like, you know, I have like one friend that posts food and I love her food pictures because she's a vegan and she inspires me. But like, I learned so much off of Facebook and I just love the Facebook groups. I think you're so right. And they've changed my life. Somebody took me over Sai Pass and Glacier Park this summer because I met them in a Facebook group. Like I've driven over the road that goes underneath Glacier Park 350 something times. And like the times I get to get out and go into that park and go hiking are limited. And the number of people I know that want to get out of the car and go into the park and go hiking are very limited. And yeah, I totally met someone in a Facebook group and the groups that we belong to and just my podcasting group has been invaluable and just, yeah. And I have to admit, way back in 2010, I didn't get Facebook till I joined a secret group. I can't even remember what it was way back then. And you have to, like you said, you know, pick and choose between the comments. But yeah, to me, my Facebook feed is like one of the most positive places. I've just been very blessed. I have good friends I've seen negative posts in other people, like some things. But for the most part, I totally agree. It's like live, real people answering questions, people being helpful. Like, and like you said, like every topic you can go. I love the birding sites too. There's lots of cool birding sites gardening sites. And yeah, that is how we met. So anyway, how about a favorite book or a magazine or like a blog or anything? Is there like something you can recommend to readers, to listeners that you've read that you like to read?
If you know, more leaning toward the entrepreneurial side of things, sure. Would be, I just discovered a book. There's a guy named Tim Ferriss.
Yeah.
Love him or hate him, but the guy is just, he just put out a book called Tools of Titans. I picked it up for my nephews as a Christmas present. And I was sitting in front of the fireplace the other night with my dog, just kind of thumbing through it. And I was just astounded at how just like that literally could be a life-changing book for somebody. The information contained within those pages is quite profound because of the sheer volume of people across the entire spectrum of everything business. And it's so in-depth. It's just amazing. I was really blown away by it. I would strongly recommend it. It's called Tools for Titans. And it's kind of like a library of just all of those fun entrepreneurial things across the board from, you know, health. It's basically, it's broken into three parts: health, wealth, and wisdom. Healthy, wealthy, wise. And it's just endless. And everybody, you know, it's basically a number of different people who are that he's interviewed and talked to, and he took all the best parts of all of that and made a book out of it. It's like 800 pages long. It's huge. And then everything inside of it, they're continuously telling you, go look at this resource, go find this resource, go try this. This is free, go do that. You know, all this just amazing information. So that would be the book that, and that's literally, you know, within the last week and a half that I've discovered that.
Okay, you have to go check out John Lee Dumas's website at Entrepreneur on Fire too, because his
Okay. Yes,
website
I will.
is like that book. It sounds
Okay.
like Tim Ferriss. I've listened to his podcast, but he's like a genius. I mean, he really like he you know he went to like Ivy League schools, and he definitely has a up there IQ. And I've learned a lot from him. The 4-hour work week definitely was a huge influence on my life. And he's got those other books, The 4-Hour Chef and The 4-Hour Body. And it's not about having to only work 4 hours a week. It's about loving what you do, working hard, and like being effective and efficient so that you can do a 40-hour week maybe in 4 hours or something, so you have more time to pursue the things that you love. You know, he talks about lifestyle design, and you know, he's just, and his, like, he talks a lot about, one of his favorite podcasts is some history podcast that's like 4 hours long or something each. I don't know, I'm not a history buff, but Tim Ferriss definitely. I'll bet that's a great book. I haven't heard that. I haven't listened to his podcast in a while. I've been really limited. I've been teaching this year, and so my podcasting hours, the time I get to listen or do anything, has been really shrunk down. But I do that little 3-hour drive every Friday and every Sunday because I teach on the other side of the mountains. I live in western Montana, but I teach just right on the other side of Glacier Park in Browning on the Indian
Okay.
Reservation. And so I drive under the park all winter long. I drive, well, I could drive through the park in like June or in September if I wasn't scared of heights, but I'm too scared to drive on the Going to the Sun Road. But anyway, yeah, so I forgot where I was going with this. But but I do listen to John Lee Dumas, and his girlfriend is Kate's Take, and she talks about like running and a business. She does like their blog, but then she came up with the audio blog where she reads their blog, and the two of them are just amazing what they've done.
Awesome.
Anyway,
I'll
yeah,
definitely
you'll
check that.
like John. So then I do like to ask, like, since you have a business, do you have like any advice on listeners? Like, usually I ask about how to sell produce or get started in the industry, or do you want to talk to more, like, so what are you saying, like, you, like, people can like almost like franchise with you if they want to start like learning how to raise, but like, or you just coach people to open their own business, or I didn't quite catch that part.
No, that's a good
Or
question. Think of it more in terms of like a program. So here's a program that you can get into, and I will basically give you, I will open up the book in terms of everything I know in how to do this. And that's the program. And you come here to Michigan, and it's a 4-day training echelon, basically, and we go through everything. What you do with it after that point is solely up to you. So I was in franchising for many years, and I can tell you it's a awesome business model from the standpoint of having just having skin in the game through an investment. Now that you're going to have to carry through, because a lot of people get into businesses and whatnot, and they have great ideas and they're very motivated and they want to do great things. But there's always the part when you take the rose-colored glasses off, like, oh, I didn't anticipate that. Here's the things I didn't see coming, and they get very discouraged. And a lot of them, that's why you see businesses really, it's very difficult to create a successful business. It's not easy. It's easier to not, to, you know what I mean? It's easier to fail than it is to succeed. So, that's what we do. My real goal is to create a very, very deep and wide network of builders who are all doing this, kind of like in a mini production standpoint, which is going to lead to a chain of growers, which will lead to a chain of producers, which will lead to a chain of customers. And I'm working on that very thing right now. So, you know, there's a whole lot in the world in terms of jobs, and we need this. And being in rural Michigan and just the rural United States, you don't have to read too far into the news to see. Jobs are an issue. The manufacturing base in America is gone, and it's not coming back. I don't care, you know, what the president-elect wants to say. That's, you know, those types of things in the way that you would think, they're not coming back. And it's not don't rely on anybody else. You rely on yourself. You're a human being. You're one of the most amazing things ever, you know, discovered in the universe, if not the single most amazing thing ever discovered. And you'd be amazed at the power that you have. And so take the bull by the horns and let's create that ourselves. We don't need anybody to do it for us. You know what I mean? And so that's really, that's our mantra with FarmWorks, and that's what we want to produce. This, we have a very large vision that comes with this, raised beds just being one part of it. But because raised beds produce things, and like we were talking earlier in terms of the exponential factor of nature, it won't stop. You just continue and continue and continue, and we're producing food. And that's a very important component, right, to humanity. You must eat. And so if we're producing food as a kind of a staple product, it's going to be hard to go wrong, in my opinion. You know, the odds for success are pretty good. We're not trying to, you know, to make the next great .com type thing, because, you know, that's not very important to me, those types of things. But real community, and it's so obvious, anytime you get into, and I know you know this firsthand, no doubt, that the community aspect of food and food growing and gardening, it touches everybody. Everybody has some type of connection to it. And it's always smiles. It's always excitement. It's always inspiring. You don't really see like negativity. You just don't see that. And that's why I love this as a business, because we only deal with honest people. Gardeners and growers are very honest people. You don't get any of the bait and switch. None of that is going on with this. This is all just real, and we're doing this, and it's all goodwill. And I can't think of anything else I'd rather be doing than this right here, for sure.
Aw, I love this. I'm so glad we're talking today. What a great way to spend Christmas Eve. This has been awesome. And I know listeners are going to like it, because I just got to tell you, you totally sound like Matt Damon. People are going to be out there listening, like, I could listen to this guy talk all day long. I don't know if you've been in L.A. for, like, you were in L.A. and you picked up, like, some kind of accent down there, but, like, that's what I picture in my head. It's funny.
That's so funny. No, I can tell you I look nothing like Matt Damon. That's funny, though. Thank you. That's very nice of you to say that. Thank you.
All right. Well, it's just, I don't know. It was just what I was thinking ever since, like, we got on the call. I was like, wow, that's weird. Okay, Chris, ready for my final question?
Let's do it.
Okay. If there's one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about or a project you'd like to see put into action? Which is pretty much what you just all said about the project you're working on, and you can use that. What do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally, nationally, or on a global scale?
You know, if I honestly, the biggest change I would like to see is this consumer, hyper-consumerism. I would love to see that just crushed into a million pieces and us look back on that and just say, you know, we kind of slipped. We had this love affair with materialism. We kind of got caught up in it. We didn't really realize the impacts in a large scale, because we have almost sentenced future generations to a very difficult life as a result. And I would really like for everyone to just say, you know what, this isn't really what we're meant for. You know, that just that hyper-consumerism, that you see everything and everywhere, you're advertised to 700 times every single day, which is changing your brain in a certain way. And so that would be the ultimate change, is for people to wake up from that and, you know, kind of all come around the fire and shake hands and, you know, kind of like a repurpose, you know, and for sensibility, you know. I guess that's a lofty thing, but let's all just be reasonable. It's like reasonability is gone,
right? And so our whole country's like based on greed instead of like being kind to each other. Like, what happened to, like, what can you do for your country instead of what can I gain?
Yes,
I think that's what you're trying to say anyway.
It is absolutely, yes, it's to just get out of that mentality, you know. It really, it's so funny. I was reading something somewhere, and the challenge was, here's a picture, and you tell me what state I'm in. And what they would show would be that one main avenue with all of the big box chains and all of the chain restaurant and all of that. And they'd say, well, what state am I in? And really? Look at that picture and try to determine what state is that. Who knows? Because every single state has that, and they all look like that now, where you wouldn't be able to know it going down the highway. in terms of where you're at. So we're losing, in many respects, the kind of an identity in a way to these corporate brands. And it's branding is very important, and I understand all of those things. But as a whole, I don't know. Michigan used to be known as the automobile capital of the world for many reasons, you know, and every little state kind of had their own thing. But we've kind of lost that in many respects. I don't know.
I think you guys are getting kind of a gardening reputation, though. Like, didn't I just see something about it wasn't, is it Detroit has like more community gardens than anywhere in the United States or something?
You know, I wouldn't doubt that. There is a real resurgence in the Detroit area for urban farming. Let's just call it what, right? And that's what that is. And I'm glad you brought that up. I work, a good friend of mine, Vincent Smith, is a former running back for the University of Michigan. He has a group called Team Gardens, and he has basically been given about, I think it's 5 or 6 city lots in the city of Flint. And he has gone up there and is in the process of building just an amazing community garden in one of the worst neighborhoods in Flint, quite sadly. And he's had a great impact in that respect. And so there is a thing in Michigan for that. There really is, and Detroit being the first. I have not dipped a toe in that world, just because of a bunch of other reasons, but it is a thing. It certainly is the kind of a reurbanization there of Detroit, which is a very, very positive thing. So yeah. I encourage the heck out of that for sure.
So you know him? Maybe you could hook me up with him and he would do an interview with me.
Oh, he would love to. Absolutely.
Oh, that'd be great.
He's a good friend of mine. I spend a lot of time with him. He's part of my team, and I'm part of his team in that sense. And he's a great guy.
Cool.
Great guy.
So just the last thing I ask is just, do you have an inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into the dirt and start their own garden? Not that you haven't dropped like tons of golden seeds and been super inspirational. I can't believe you're not a millennial because you act like the millennials. But I still think there's something in that group of people, like just in your age group, that are like something special too. But just, you know, I just think you're one of those people that really cares about our planet and really cares about creating green jobs. And I just love that.
Thank you very much. From the millennial aspect, my two oldest children are 23 and 19. And so I'm call me the bridge between, you know, the old and the new. And so I know a lot of that stuff and, you know, from the digital world. And, you know, and they obviously know considerably more of it because they've just been immersed with it since birth, where I was not. But, you know, that connection is a very strong one. And so that's probably why you see folks like myself or my and around our age group that they really do take, you know, we take this very seriously. And because we can clearly see what's going on. And maybe we just have just a touch more experience, which is just a, you know, a fancy word to say failure. We failed in other ways. And so they don't have to. And, you know, steer clear of this and, you know, focus on that. You'll be good in that respect. But from an inspirational quote standpoint, there's a place up the road called Greenfield Village, and it's basically like a mock, you know, little town that Henry Ford has put in as part of the Ford Motor Corporation. Or it's basically Henry Ford's, you know, museum, basically. It's an outdoor museum. And what really inspires me, I'm very inspired by Henry Ford in terms of what he was able to do, although it, you know, there's always the good with the bad in terms of automobiles, but how he was able to really elevate the living standard of Americans. And he's very much an inspiration to me in those methods and the way he was thinking. And he didn't really get his business going until he was 40, things along those lines. But there was a quote, it's not even by him, but it's by Daniel Webster, that sits outside of it. It's on my website too. But it's basically something along the lines of like, when the tillage begins, like all the other arts can follow. So therefore, like the farmer is basically like the founder of civilization. Like, so the person that creates and gets the food going is the founder of civilization, and everybody else can then do what they are supposed to do or would love to do or are very passionate about doing because the food has been taken care of at that point. I feel like that is a very inspiring thing to me personally, and I take it very serious to say, you know what, let's found something new here. There needs to be that next step in agriculture. We need to take that next step where we get out of this analog way of doing things and get more into the digital way. And again, using that shepherd mentality, don't whip it, shepherd it, and we can create something very, very special and kind of put our own mark in history. And this is our opportunity to do it. It really is. It's very clear what's going to happen if something doesn't change. I don't think anybody, you know, the writing is very much on the wall. And so it's now, let's do this. That really is my motto, and that's what I get up and do every single day.
I love that. I was thinking there's like a Henry Ford quote that you were going to say that's like, either you can or you can't, you'll be right.
Yeah, that's a good one too. Right? Either way, you are correct. If you think you can or you think you cannot, either way, you're right.
Yeah.
So that was a Henry Ford quote. You're right.
But I love everything that you said. All right, well, just tell everybody how to connect with you. You've been just such a wonderful guest, Chris. Thank you so much for taking time away from your family on Christmas Eve to talk to us and share this amazing. It's an opportunity for some people that might want to do this, or for teaching people about raised beds, or for just sharing your knowledge of organics and caring for our planet.
Well, thank you, Jackie. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. You can reach me. I'm at farmworksannarbor.com is our website. Email me, info@farmworksbuilders.com. I'm on Facebook. Farmworks is on Facebook. You know, all your typical digital stuff that's out there is how you can contact me. And I shy away from nobody. You know, I love to talk to anybody and everybody who's into this kind of thing, because it's, like I said, it's all, we can all improve our knowledge and in a practical way of what we're doing. So anywhere I can help, I'm here to do it.
Thank you so much. Well, you guys have a very happy holiday.
Thank you, Jackie. Merry Christmas to you. I can't wait to, you know, see what the future holds. So I thank you very much. I love what you're doing there. It's fantastic.
Thanks. I love it too, because of my great guest, just like you. If you know somebody who would benefit from the Organic Gardener podcast, we would just love it if you would share it with a friend. Thanks again for listening, and remember to grow.